Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hi, this is Craig. Just want to let you know you can now advertise here on Everyone Loves Guitar podcast. For more information, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And man, I've got just a great guy on the show with Chris Blackwell out of Atlanta. Not only is he a good player and a smart guy, he's one of the nicest, sweetest guys that you'll meet. And before we go any further, I just want to say a big thank you to Tommy Talton and Jason Laughlin for hooking us up. Chris, as I said, is an Atlanta-based guitarist, songwriter, producer, and studio musician. He was born into a family of musicians and began playing guitar at the ripe old age of 5 on his granddad's Gibson J50 acoustic. He's been playing professionally since he was 15. He grew up surrounded by a wide variety of musical influences, and he's gone on personally to work in a multitude of genres such as rock, country, R&B, jazz, blues, gospel, and loads of others. Throughout his career, he's played on stage or in studio with loads of notable artists. Some of them are Jennifer Holliday, Jimmy Buffett, T. Graham Brown, Bo Bice, James Otto, the great Mac McAnally, Tommy Talton, as I mentioned, Deborah Cox, John Berry, Lee Williams. I'm going to mess this up. Inoj.
Her name is Yanni, but it's just Yanni spelled backwards.
Oh, okay. Inoj. You know, is she like past 1990? Like anything like after 1990, Chris, I just don't know. So I tend to butcher it. This is another good one. Shinwa Hawk. Is that like an American Indian?
Man. Yes, you got it.
That's cool. You know what, man? Grew up in New York City, so I got a little bit of an edge. So what I don't know intellectually, I can sort of muscle through linguistically. Rocktronics, of course, the Greg Allman laid-back legacy band, and Chris is in a really successful band, ABBA tribute called ABBAmania. He's touring with various artists, including, as I said, ABBAmania, and they're the original from London's West End, and he performs regularly in the Atlanta area with the Mike Veal Band. His guitar work is featured on many albums, including 4 Billboard Top 20 charting singles and on television and radio commercials. He's a proud endorser of VVT amplifiers, Eastman guitars, Cracker Caster guitars, Elixir strings, Jetter effects, and Revo guitar shots. Man, I always respect guys when they put that in their bio because like you're doing your sponsors right. And I just think that's really cool, you know?
Oh, thank you, man. Well, yeah, all those people you mentioned have been great to me. I mean, I've never been one to go looking for free stuff, you know, but when you're out doing this thing like this, you know, for so long on the road, it's good to have people who will help you out.
I'm just happy you said for so long. You're like younger than some jeans I have, but you've been doing this for like your whole life. So that's great, man.
Start young, brother.
Hey, in your bio, you mentioned that your guitar work is featured on 4 Billboard Top 20 singles. I was wondering if you could pick a couple of those and talk about your experiences in making the record, and specifically, who is the artist, how you got the gig, and a memorable experience or a cool, funny thing that happened working with the
Oh, sure. Well, one of those would be both are Atlanta artists. And I'm sitting here in a studio today that's just, it's a little north of Atlanta, and I do a lot of work here. A friend of mine named Trammell owns this place. And so he does a lot of anything from country to new age to jazz, contemporary jazz. The Rhythm Jets is a band that's here in Atlanta, and they're kind of, I guess you would consider them contemporary jazz, smooth jazz. I don't know, man. It's also, you know, there was adult contemporary for a while, then there was smooth jazz for a while. Now there's contemporary jazz. I don't know where the lines get drawn, blurred, or whatever. But anyway, they fit into that. And we worked on 2 of their records here, and one song in particular named Ladera actually charted. And I don't know where it got to, maybe 5 or 6 on the charts. On
the
Billboard, yeah. And I was lucky enough to have a guitar solo on that tune. And another artist named Carol Albert, also from the Atlanta area here. She's a pianist, and same kind of thing, that contemporary jazz. I don't know. Somebody's probably going to write to me and say, man, it's not contemporary jazz. I don't know what it is. It's adult, you know, it's what I would consider smooth jazz, you know. But again, I played guitar on her last two records, and man, she's had 3 or 4 of those songs chart on Billboard.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun. And, you know, man, you never know. I mean, I was as surprised as anyone to find out. You know, I just got a phone call. Hey, man, these songs are charting one. And I was like, wow, you know, it's fun. But, right. You know, you read so many stories or watch, you know, dig around online watching videos and, you know, you'll watching all these iconic songs or these records and people say, oh, man, we had no idea, you know, this was going to be. And I can see that. Not that I've ever done anything of epic proportion like a, you know, like a Asia or something, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, I guess these guys, you just go in and you have no idea what's going to hit or miss.
But I think, well, first of all, shout out to Trammell Starks for studio hookup. But I think that's more realistic what you're talking. I mean, who's doing Asia? I mean, that's like saying, you know, oh, my business exploded like the iPhone. That shit doesn't, you know, I've been in business 20 years, man. And that's just like, that doesn't happen, you know? So like the more things is like, hey, you're on 4 top 20 hits, man. That's pretty good. Cause most guys would kill, you know, to be playing on a 4 top 20 hits around the corner from their house where they grew up in the studio, you know?
Absolutely, man. Well, I'm one of those guys. I can't believe it. Just when I was hearing you read it off, I was thinking, man, did I really do that? But it's fun. And both of those people, both Carol and the Rhythm Jets, they play, you know, around jazz festivals and that kind of thing. And I go and play with them, you know,
that's when great, they
do it. So it's fun.
I'm like you. I hate like dealing with categories.
Yeah.
And cause I just like to say they're a really good rock band, but oh, what kind of rock? Is it stoner rock? Is it metal? Is it new metal? Is it alternative? Fuck. It's just,
I it's funny to me. I mean, because I guess in the music industry, I've only been doing it for 25 years. So I guess
I think you're in, Chris.
It's like, I just feel like any day somebody's going to call me and be like, well, that's it, man. No more for you. You know,
no. But I think so everybody that works for themselves feels like that from time to time in or out. Yeah. That's just a normal feeling. I think so.
Well, the self-loathing knows no ends. But man, what was I saying?
We were talking about categorizing, you know, music.
I still don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've never known. I mean, like they always say, there's two kinds of music, you know, good or bad.
Yeah.
And that's been, I mean, if I like it, I like it. You know,
I had no idea that ABBA was still so popular, to be 100% honest with you. And you were telling me before this interview, you know, first time we talked, I think, that it's a very successful gig. Can you talk about that gig, how you got it, and like the environment around it maybe or something?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it's a funny story. I was driving one day, phone rings. I answer it, and it's a guy on the other end said, "Hello, mate." You know, I'm part of this ABBA tribute show and we're coming to America and we need a bloody guitarist. And, you know, and please don't persecute me over my British accent.
No, you're good, man.
But anyway, this guy, I wasn't sure how he had found me, but it was ABBA Mania and they were coming to the States to do 6 weeks or something. And what had happened, I found this all out later, but what had happened was one of the guys in the show had trouble getting his green card or passport or something to come over. So the guitar player stepped up and took that guy's role. So it left him down a guitar player. And we talked and talked, and he told me, you know, all the details. And I said, man, I need to think about it for a couple of days. And he said, man, I don't have a couple of days. I need to get this wrapped up. And I said, give me an hour to call you back. And I called him. I thought about it, talked with, you know, all the people and made all the arrangements and all that. And I got all the details and everything seemed fine. And I went and got on a bus with, you know, about 10 people from London and went on about playing the music of ABBA. And to tell you the truth, Craig, excuse me, I couldn't have named three ABBA songs with a gun to my head before that. You know,
was that your hesitation why you said I needed an hour?
Yeah. Well, not only that, but I was like, man, who are these guys? How do these people know me? How did any of this happen? And that's kind of funny because I didn't find that out until I had a 3 or 4 days before it started. And I was like, man, how did these guys from London get a hold of me from the middle of nowhere, North Georgia, you know? And come to find out, it was a mutual friend of mine that was from Wales that had years ago worked with some of these guys.
That is so cool, man.
Yeah, they had called him to do it. He's been living here in America for, I don't know, 15 years or so. He put them on to me. So since then, the show has evolved into there's a cast that stays there and does all the European stuff. And we have an American cast now. And, you know, it goes and does about a 6 or 7 week run, usually in the winter from about January through middle of March. And it's so fun, man. I would have never – I grew up on, you know, the Allman Brothers.
It's before your time. Yeah, I know. It's like 10 or 15 years before your time probably.
Yeah, and the disco thing. I mean, I missed it all and never really had my curiosity like some other
dude, music. That was a painful era. So it's kind of like sleeping through it. You made out on that.
But. Well, I'm kind of getting to relive it now because the people that come to the shows, they do it up, man.
Oh, do they?
Especially you go somewhere like Aspen or Sedona.
That's really cool.
And they come out, man. It's like, wow, I guess this is what it was like, you know. But it's fun. And it's a unique show, I think, ABBA, because of they've got the costumes and there's the choreography and all that kind of thing. So it's a kind of a rock show. But they had also Mamma Mia and Chess, the musical. Hmm. So it's all these other elements that play into the show that really make it a great kind of theater kind of show.
That's cool, man. So do you have to dance
no, no, man, I don't.
I look forward to seeing Chris Blackwell dancing? That's what I'm trying to find out here.
No, dude, they don't. Nobody wants to see all this.
I'm with you, me and you both.
Luckily for me, I just suit up in all black for the first half of the show and all white for the second half. And I leave all the fancy stuff to the main four cats.
Oh, that's cool. So you don't have to be trampsing around. That's great.
Yeah. But yeah. I've got to say before I finish up, once I got into that catalog, I realized that they were great, man. ABBA, it's really great stuff. I mean, it was well put together, great parts, and kind of a little ahead of its time, I think, production-wise.
Yeah, they had a lot of hit songs, man. They really did, you know, for sure. And they, you know, hey, they for them to still be around here, you know, tribute bands doing their stuff, that shows you that's a lot. I'm 55. That's, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty long time, man, to have that kind of longevity, which is great.
Right now, I think this period that we're in right now is going to go down as the great tribute band scare of the 2000s.
But, you know, you got to make money. You can't make money playing records, so you got to be out playing.
Oh, I know. I know, man. And, you know, a lot of guys that have these tributes are, you know, guys that play with the actual artists. Yeah. You know, I've seen that a lot. You know, I run into it out there on the road. You see guys, Liberty DeVito, I think, from Billy Joel's band. He has a Billy Joel tribute.
Does he really? I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yep. It's you see more and more of it. But it's the good and bad. You know, I see. I mean, a lot of the mid-sized clubs and that kind of thing, they just they will have nothing but nights of these tribute bands. So it's great that there's still kind of a scene. But at the same time, what about the guy, you know, the original scene is kind of taking a back seat or your typical, you know, variety band like I grew up playing in when I was younger and started playing. I mean, we would go and play. I mean, man, I would play, you know, Conway Twitty followed by Van Halen, followed by Mustang Sally, you know, what have you. Just the typical bar band, variety band kind of stuff. And now it's almost like you have to have a, you know, some kind of camera ready tribute show for
some gimmick almost. Yeah.
Yeah. Like gimmick type of thing. And it's like, well, you know, So it's definitely a double-edged sword.
I think the problem is, and I don't know how this is going to get resolved, you got guys that are my age that grew up in band and going to clubs to see music. Mm-hmm. Well, we still like that. The ones that are healthy enough to get out. I went to a show. I'm not going to say whose show it was. It was a great show. But, dude, I was so grateful for my health when I left there and, like, that I've taken care of myself, because there are people like maybe 5-10 years older than me that were like a wreck and like in wheelchairs and shit. So honestly, that was great that I saw that, because I had a renewed gratitude. But my demographics, they like seeing music and they don't mind paying for it. I think the concern is like my kids' age, you know, in their mid-20s, they didn't grow up going to see music. What's going to happen when they're on, you know, hopefully the new, you know, the 20 year olds then will be into it, because otherwise it's going to be no music.
Yeah. Well, it's a little, you know, I was talking with a friend the other day and I said, you know, it's, these days it's kind of it's hand to hand combat, you know, these, a band or an artist, it's almost kind of like you have to, you know, when I was younger, I've seen this change. Now I'm going to sound like the old guy here now, but I've seen this shift just on a local kind of level, that you used to go a band, you just go do a gig, you know, a club gig, a bar gig, and people would come, the place would, the people were there based on the reputation of the place. They yes. liked the place. It's like, oh, this place is going to have music. But now, for whatever reason, the clubs and the people seem to think that it's the band's responsibility to bring the people in there.
Yeah.
You know? It's just a weird, people have their own following, the social media thing and all that. And it's almost like clubs or promoters, even on every level, people are using that as the gauge as to whether or not you're worth anything
to book a band, which means new bands are completely kind of fucked.
Right. Absolutely.
Because you don't have a following day one, you know, and then you got to just spend tons of time. It was funny. I was in the gym the other day and some guy knows about my show and I was talking to him and he's like, hey man, there's this band across, they're young kids, but they've been together 7 years and they're great. What do you think they should do? I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, they want to get noticed. I said, they better get on YouTube and start making videos. I said, they got to spend a lot of time doing that for a few years. I said, because that's the only way they're going to get noticed by anybody. He goes, even by the record labels. I said, especially by the record labels.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Views and likes are the new currency, man.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. But you're smart. Like you've got to have a plan B, man. You know, you've got studio work, you've got jingles, you've got commercials, you know, so you're hustling, you got plan B, C, and D, and I'm sure you're always working those things. It's not like you take them for granted. Yeah. And I think you need to do that to be a musician in today's economy.
Well, you do need to have several irons in the fire. I mean, it's, I think like a lot of guys, I mean, you enjoy playing different types of music. I got lucky with, years and years ago, I had a friend that it still owns a small, like an indie jazz label. And we had a band together and did a few records. And through his label, he was really plugged in on the licensing side of things.
That's great.
And he got me hip to all. I mean, man, I was in my mid-20s and still I didn't know anything about anything. You know, he got me. He's like, man, you got to, you know, do you write songs? I was like, oh, I got all kind of, you know, and I've, you know, I had already played on several, you know, records and was all the way into a, you know, had a career going and everything, but I didn't know shit about publishing or owning this or that, you know. But so through him, and his name's Joseph Patrick Moore, and he runs Blue Canoe Records. So he was able to get me affiliated with BMI or told me how to do it and said, man, I hear you, your catalog. And so through his record company, he pushes through several different kind of licensing places, you know. And so I've been able to get some songs placed or, you know, have some co-writes. We write a lot of music and trade it back and forth. He's in Vegas now, so not play on something, send it to me or vice versa, and we just put it in, you know. It's just a catalog and it's constantly out there being pushed and it's available for anybody to use it, you know. I've had some things in some commercials and you know, you'll get a statement here and there, and you won't realize, you know, you're, oh wow, what was this? That time I was down here in the studio playing all this weird guitar shit. Now it ended up, you know, on the background of something on the Discovery Channel or whatever. You know,
that's great. But yeah, the 20s is great to get that, Chris, because most people don't get that till much later. And the other way you got to look at it is, by the time you're in your mid 50s, you'll have 30 years of cataloging music, man. So that'll be a great asset for you.
Well, you know, Craig, when you're young or starting out, you know, the only thing you care about is wanting to go and play.
Sure.
You know? And still, that's 90% of how I feel now. It's just, as long as there's somewhere for me to go play my guitar, I'm happy. But somewhere along the way, you realize it's like, well, you know, you go do a gig somewhere, you play, and ever how great it is, as high as you get on the music or whatever, once that gig's over, it's done. It's gone. The music's gone up in the air. And content is the only thing that is ever going to stick around after you're gone, you know?
Absolutely.
Music, recordings and stuff, and you want to own it. You want to have a good bit of, it's like odds, you know, it's like how do you expect to have any kind of opportunities like this, or have, you know, licensing opportunities or commercial, what have you, if you don't have, you know, a bunch of stuff sitting there ready to go.
Yeah.
You know?
And I guarantee you, every time you get one of those checks, it gets you motivated to say, man, I need to go. I have today free. Let me go write some songs and put them in my catalog, because yeah, I totally get that, man.
And it's real great. I mean, you know, there's several of us here. It's kind of a core group of guys around here that we all feel that way. So it's not, I mean, sometimes, you know, it's easy enough to go ahead and bang your head against the wall if you feel stuck or you feel like, you know, unmotivated to do something like that. But if you've got, you know, friends that are all kind of in the game with you, it's easy enough for, you know, to stay motivated to do something like that.
That's awesome, man. I know you got a couple of CDs or albums you're working on. So my question is, what are you working on now that you are excited about?
Yeah, well, man, I'm working with, there's a singer here in Atlanta. Her name is Alfreda Gerald, and she is just unbelievable. And this is going to sound weird when I say it, but she used to sing with Yanni, you know, age.
Interesting.
She was so if you look up any footage of Yanni, not that anybody would want to, I don't guess, but if you did, you would see a incredible singer being featured. Alfreda is her name, and she sang on a few of Warren Haynes' records. I know of at least one of his solo records, and she has toured a lot with Warren. As his kind of backup singer. And she also, he features her on a few songs. And, if you know who Otil Burbridge is,
bass player. Yeah.
She is the lead singer in Otil's band, and she's on his new record.
Very cool.
And she's doing kind of a blues rock kind of project. And I'm somehow lucky enough to be the guitar player. I've been knowing her for so long. We've done so many sessions together for other people, and she's always wanted to do a project, and she's finally kind of got around to doing it.
That's great, man.
You know, Otil's playing bass on a few tracks. There's a great drummer named Sonny Emery that's playing on it. I'm just thrilled to be a part of it.
Dude, so you're
the reason I brought up the Yanni thing. I'm sorry. The only reason I brought up the Yanni thing is just to say, you know, there she is singing this new age classical stuff in this very operatic, incredible voice. But her real passion is, you know, blues rock.
Yeah.
You know, so she's, that's what she's got going.
That's great, man. Well, I'm excited for you, and I'm looking forward to that coming out.
Thank you.
So are you from Atlanta?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I say Atlanta. I'm actually from a little town that's maybe 40 miles north called Ball Ground.
Wow, that's one of them, yep, funky names, and Ball Ground.
You know, anywhere I've been in the world, so I say Ball Ground. I get at least one Huh? What's that?
I was going to say, I know Ball Ground. This is to fuck with you, but.
Oh, man. That would have been a first. Oh, shit. Then you probably know my cousin. Well, Ball Ground, it's actually, I should know this as much as I've had to talk about it, but I do know that it gets its name because it wasn't an Indian lacrosse, you know, kind of settlement.
I guess. That's cool, man.
It's where they, I mean, there was a lot of that went on there. Different tribes too throughout the year. It's been, it just had its some anniversary there. I should know more about it. But Ball Ground, it's a great place, man. I mean, it's a small town. I went to school there. And it's kind of one of those places where we still don't even lock our doors, you know?
Really? Man, you know what? I would have loved to grow up in some place like that. I'm the opposite because I grew up in New York, in the Bronx, the worst part of New York City. Like, yeah. I locked the door when I walked the dog. Yeah. Like, as soon as I get out of my truck, I lock it, put the alarm on. And my wife's always like, what the heck? And she's from a little town in England. So same thing, like more like what you grew up with. And she's looking at, I'm like, hey, you know, old hat, you know, someone could be here jacking our shit. Yeah. You don't know. And she's like, and then like when my daughter will go out just like to grab some food, she's like, I'm like, make sure you lock the door. And everybody's looking at me like, yep. I'm like, man, what if someone comes in here? So I envy, not envy, but I appreciate the innocence and ability to have that freedom, man.
That it's been able to maintain. I mean, there's been, you know, some changes through the years, but it has always maintained its kind of small town vibe. You know, it's kind of, there's zero crime. I mean,
that's wonderful, man.
Yeah, it is a great place, and I've been everywhere, man. And I think I'd just as soon be there as I would anywhere.
Do you go back there, or how far away from do you live there now, or
still live there now?
Oh, you still live there now. That's awesome, man. That is really cool. And are you and your daughter's growing up there?
She is.
That is nice, man. Good for you. I really like that, man.
My old family home, the house I grew up in. I still have that. So she's there. I'm lucky enough to still have my grandmother. Still living. One grandmother and a grandfather are still alive, and they're all kind of live, you know, and everyone used to live super, families would live really close together, you know, in these small towns. So you might have my dad's entire side of the family lives all in kind of a 2 mile circumference, or whatever. What's the word I'm looking for?
Radius.
Radius. There you go. Circumference. And same on my mom's side. So you just go kind of holidays or whatever, you just kind of go and see everyone, you know.
It's really cool, man.
Right there. So I'm glad that she's going to have that, because that's what I had when I was a kid, you know.
So it sounded like you had a really good childhood growing up, normal. Yeah,
I did, man. It was simple, you know. I mean, not a lot going on in a place like Ball Ground.
It's all right, man.
Yeah,
that's totally great. Simple, boring is good.
Trying to play guitar.
That's great, man. Do you have brothers and sisters?
I don't. I didn't grow up. I have now. I have a stepbrother and a stepsister, but I grew up as an only child. That came along when I was about 16 or so. My father passed away with brain cancer when I was.
Holy 16. Shit! Are you how old?
14.
Wow, I'm sorry, man. Fuck.
14. Thank you, man.
Wow. That's heavy shit to deal with as a 14-year-old.
It is I wouldn't wish it for anyone, you know, much less a man, you know, at that age, you know. And it's all shit you don't realize at the time. You're just kind of going through it. But now as a 37-year-old man and kid of my own, I kind of look back and think, you know, that's you're at the age right then where, you know, your dad.
You need that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need that guidance.
But I sure miss him.
Yeah, man. I'm so sorry, Chris. That's heavy stuff to deal with for a young kid, man.
You know what's funny about my dad is he was the only one that didn't play anything in the family. You know, his brother, my uncle Jeff, who unfortunately has also passed away now, but he was a professional musician, and my grandfather, he had six or seven of them, brothers and sisters, and they were bluegrassers, you know. They all played and sang. And
those are great musicians, man.
They are, man.
Incredible.
Man, every family function was a full-on get-down, man.
Yeah. And you know what? I've interviewed a lot of people in the bluegrass genre, and I will tell you for sure, they are some of the most loving, warm, extremely community-oriented people. I mean, they're very open with their feelings. So I would imagine you had a really great environment growing up, because I noticed that, not that everybody, everybody I've spoken to has been great, but in particular, the bluegrassers are very open.
Well, I think the music is it's a family-oriented thing. You know, I mean, truthfully, it just comes from, it's kind of similar, I guess, to the blues, and that it was just born out of a specific, you know, you find it more in rural places, you know, where people, music was about the only thing they had to do.
Yeah, they get together and that's what they, very much so. A lot in the Carolinas, especially.
Yes. Yeah, Virginia.
Virginia, North Carolina, yeah.
That's wonderful. I mean, I wish I would have. These days I'm getting into more and more bluegrass. Although I was around it all the time as a kid, I had to, you know, I went a little more toward Dwayne Allman than I did Tony Rice. But you know,
that's not a bad thing.
I mean, you know, you love it all. I mean, and now I sit around, you know, and I mean, when I hear that music, it does something, you know, inside. I feel it. It's in there somewhere. But I just, I haven't dedicated a lot of time to learning it and really, you know, studying it as a serious student.
Yeah, but I think it's not like you'd get called for a bluegrass session.
Well, that's true. You wouldn't get called for a bluegrass session because those guys, I guess, are usually, you know, bands, which are self-contained. And I mean, that's the beauty of it. You know, for me, I mean, I wouldn't want to hear a bluegrass session. I want to hear bluegrass by guys that have been together for a long time.
Yeah,
you know,
totally, man.
And, you know, family singing together, that bluegrass harmony, you know, you get family singing. It's hard to beat that.
It is, man. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I don't know you very long, but I'm really proud of you because first time we talked, you told me you did something that is literally incredible, and very few people have the patience and discipline to do it, and you underwent a physical transformation, and if you're open and okay with that, I'd love for you to share it with my listeners because I was incredibly impressed with that, I'm very proud of you and for you, man.
Thank you. Yes, I used to be Christy, and now I'm...
Wait, we didn't talk about that. Not that I'm judging.
Oh, hell no. But no, man, well, thank you for that. And yeah, I didn't... I guess it's not something I've talked about a whole hell of a lot. I mean, I was through Facebook and all. I mean, just friends and everything. But basically, I guess it was 2016. I had some random pain in my side, and I ended up in the emergency room, and finally I just looked at guy and said, I've got some pain, I want you to kill me and then back it off one notch. And so through a series of tests, the doctor finally came in there and said, well, man, I got good news and bad news. The good news is you don't have anything like a kidney stone. There's nothing really going on over there in the side, but the bad news is you're definitely type 2 diabetic. You know, your sugar is, I mean, at that time, 300, you know.
Or, as a frame of reference, so people know what's a normal.
Well, normal, I mean, you would want it to be somewhere at 90, you know, or 100 or so after you've ate. I mean, but there's a test they do. It's called the A1C test. And, you know, I'm sure everybody probably has had one done as part of a routine physical, but it basically does a 3-month average of your blood sugar, and you want it to kind of be in the 5 range. It gives you like a 1 through 12 number, and you want it to be a 5, mid fives, 5.2 or something, and mine was a 9, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bad. So anyway, I didn't know anything about diabetes. And I freaked out a little bit. They gave me a shot of insulin there in the emergency room and all. And he scared the shit out of me, you know, and he said, man, you need to go see your doctor immediately. You know, as soon as you get out of here, make an appointment as soon as you can and go see your regular doctor. So I just went home that night and was sitting there, and I'd put my Rylan, my daughter, she was two at the time. And, I put her to bed, and I remember walking into the kitchen, and I just lost it, man. I mean, I sit on the floor and just had to come apart, as they would say.
Yeah, yeah.
And because, you know, I was thinking, fuck, man, I'm 35 years old. I mean, this is having had, you know, my dad passing away when I was
– Right, I knew that's where you were going with that. You're thinking about your daughter, man.
Dude, you know, it's been, you know, it's all of our greatest fear. I mean, you know, you think about one of these days I'm not going to be here, but man, I was like, now here I am doing everything I can do to speed up the process. You know, I said, I can't do it. And however, somehow I just sat there and made my mind up and found the courage. And I just started that day. I said, you know, I don't know anything about diabetes. I don't know about foods and what the sugar and this and that. I said, but I've got common sense. So I just started that day. And if I felt like something was bad, I didn't eat it. And I just started walking. I started the very next day. And Craig, I was 325 pounds.
Wow. How tall are you?
I'm 6'2".
You're a big guy, but 325 is, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, a lot of big guys in my family and all that. I mean, I had a lot of people say, well, man, I never would have said that. You carried it well and all that, but I mean, it's still 325 pounds.
Well, it's just your body's not designed and equipped to carry that much weight. That's the thing.
Oh, and just like a lot of things, you know, you don't realize how bad it is until you're on the other side of it and you're thinking, holy shit, how did I live like that? Yeah. But the short version is, so I just started that day when I got home from the emergency room and just cut out all the bullshit food and started walking. And I remember I showed up to the walking track one day and I barely made it a lap around the track. And that is like six laps around the track is a mile. And I would show up some days and I would think, okay, I'm going to make it halfway today. I'm going to make it halfway around the track. That's how bad my back and knees and all that were hurting. I've had a couple of back surgeries too and all that. Mm-hmm. But man, throughout the year of 2016, in about, I would say 10 months, I'd lost 100 pounds.
That is so awesome, man. Congratulations.
2 miles in the morning and another mile or two in the evening, you know, just as part of a regular. Well, thank you, man. Well, you know, it's like I was saying, you don't realize how bad off things were. You know, you're depressed, you know, you feel like shit. You don't know. I mean, until you get all that taken care of, you know, that's the only way you're ever really going to know how bad it was.
Yeah, losing weight is very sneaky like that. You don't know how much better you're going to feel until you take it off. Yeah. So the appeal is really not high for certain people, you know, because you think, what's the big deal? But exercising is such a great medicine for you. I mean, like,
man,
I go to the gym pretty much 5 days a week, and I had about 2 weeks ago, I just was taken off because I was working a lot, and all of a sudden I was getting depressed, and that's not me. I don't get down really. And I went to the gym, and I always go first thing in the morning. Then it was like a Monday. I went like 6 o'clock at night, which I was miserable, but I said, let me go. 10 minutes into it, I said, now I know why I've been depressed. My whole mood for the last week. And I said, I'm not doing this again. And I really haven't missed very much over the last 20 or 30 years, but yeah, you're so right.
That's right. When I got in the middle of it and was walking, which I know none of this has anything to do directly with guitar playing, but it kind of does.
No, it has everything to do with being happy, which has everything to do with being a better musician and a better person.
Everything changed, you know, after I lost the weight, everything changed. But I mean, my playing, you know, was better. opportunities were opening up. I mean, you know, it's one of them sad realities, you know, this industry, people listen with their eyes, you know, of course, I still don't claim to be much to look at now, but at least there's less of me to see.
Nah, man, you look great, man. Are you kidding? No, I think you look great. You did a great job.
Oh, thank you, brother. But yeah, I mean, when I was, and I still do walk, but you know, if you miss a day or two, you feel bad. There's some kind of guilt, you know? And I'm real bad just to, you know, get a lot on my mind. And there's no greater place for me than on the track. Because sitting around the house and thinking about shit and walking out in nature somewhere or even on a track or on a treadmill, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, being active, and it helps me. It helps me to think my way through some things.
Yeah. Totally, man. I'm with you 100%. Well, congratulations, man. I'm really happy and, like I said, proud of and for you, man. That's a big, big, huge accomplishment. And I see I'm envisioning the info product that we're going to put together.
I got ideas. Big ideas.
I went from 325 to 225 in 12 months just by walking.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, that's great. That's great, man. And you kept it up, which is awesome, man.
I've kept it up. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I've put on probably 25 of it back. But, you know, I'm okay with that because I went extreme one way and I could feel myself trying to fall back into the old habits again. And I said, you know what, I'm not going to. So you just got to find the balance, you know. I mean, I mean, there's a lot of addiction in my family. I'm no different. You know, if I like something, I like it a whole lot.
Yeah.
And that's with food and several other things. And I've stopped them all. You know, I've been able to manage to course correct a few times in my life, man. I've been lucky.
That's really good. But the fact that you're still exercising, that's the most important just for you mentally, as we just discussed, man.
Yeah, man. It's great. I do it on the road, man. It's great. You know, and what's funny is I never even imagined, you know, when you're, you know, 325 pounds and all that, you're just so used to kind of the aches and the pains and all this jazz. You go do a gig and I was always in a good mood, but a lot of times I did feel like shit, you know, but now I be out on the road and I wake up in the morning, go hit the track, do whatever, and then come back and practice. I mean, it just gets you going, you know? Yeah. I mean, I play guitar more than I do anything else. I think about it constantly. If I'm not playing, I'm thinking about it and vice versa. And so I go out and walk and I really, during my routine is during my walk, I think about what I'm going to practice and I come back home and then I practice a little while. And then later that evening I go to the gig, you know?
That's awesome. As for everybody listening, I just want to point something out. A lot of times people are in a bad situation, whether it's physically, financially, whatever. Like, how can I ever do X? That's not how you got to think about things. It doesn't happen overnight. I'm sure when the day one, you didn't say, okay, I got to lose 100 pounds. Like, you just started walking and it naturally happened. Yeah.
You've got to start. And with drugs, with losing weight, with learning how to play the guitar, if anybody takes anything from this, I want them to hear this, that I know exactly what it's like to be in a situation and think you're too far gone.
Yeah.
You think I'm too far down this road. There's no way for me to correct this. You see other people that have done it and you think, well, they clearly have something I don't. They know something that I don't. They're smarter than me. They've got this, but none of that's true. It's not. You start, man.
Yeah.
Start. Take the first step and go. You got to stick to it. But nothing's going to happen if you don't start.
Absolutely. You know? And ask for help too, man, or ask for support. That's a big one too for a lot of people. I think for all of us, I think having help and support makes your life a lot easier. And I've struggled with that personally because I'm not a guy to ask for help, but I do now.
A lot of us are, you know, we're a little prideful and all that, but man, damn that, you know.
No, 100%. I'm not like that anymore. I learned after 50 years, I finally said, you know, I think I should ask for some help sometimes. Better late than never.
Yeah,
man. Well, thank you for sharing that, man, and I'm happy for you. Is it fair to say, like, I know you're so adaptable musically, but is it fair to say that blues and funk are your passion?
I think so. I mean, maybe I'd probably have to throw country music in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Although, I mean, I don't do a lot of it these days, but I did grow up playing country music with my grandfather and all that. A lot of the older country and through the 90s, you know, mm-hmm. it was kind of the thing that was going on here. But my guys have always been, like I mentioned, Dwayne earlier, and, you know, Stevie Ray and, you know, Larry Carlton, of course, and all the great LA guys and all the Nashville guys. I mean, I've loved so many things, man, but blues rock, I guess, is where I'm at. But if, throw in some country music too, you know.
Very cool, man.
I remember I hear guys talk about the Beatles, you know, that seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, you know.
Yeah, the guys that are like 10 years older than me, that's pretty common, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's like the, you know, the world went from black and white to color all of a sudden. But
that's a good way to put it.
I had a similar moment with Stevie Ray Vaughan. I mean, I remember I must have been 8 or 9 years old. I'd already been kind of playing. There's guitars around, and I was already kind of couldn't keep my hands off the thing. But I remember walking in one Saturday morning from my bedroom. Dad was sitting on the couch. Austin City Limits was on.
Ah.
Stevie Ray Vaughan playing that beat up Strat and just showing no mercy, man. He was just beating the shit out of that thing. And I loved everything about it. I loved the guitar. I loved that it was looked like it was about to fall apart. You know, I loved this one was the one, it was just trio. It was before he had Reese in the band. So,
sure.
Man, it was just, I was like, oh, that's it. I mean, that's it. The end. I want to be that guy. You know, I think we probably all, everybody felt that way at some point, you know, about Stevie, but you know, your tastes change, of course, as you get older. And, but I can still go, but it was such a huge thing for me. I can still go back and listen to a Stevie record and it puts me right back there.
Did you get to see him in concert at all?
I never did, man. I never did.
Mm. I saw him and Jeff Beck down here in Tampa, actually.
Oh, shit.
Good show back in the 90s, of course. I want to talk about gear in a minute, but before I do, is there any, like, looking back, any advice that you would have given to your younger self that would have made your life easier, less stressful? You know, doesn't have to be musically anything.
Oh, hell, man. I don't know how much time you got. You know, I mean, that's a great question, Craig. Dang. Any advice I would have given to make my life easier?
Assuming you would have listened.
Oh, well, I'm sorry?
Assuming you would have listened.
Assuming I would have listened. Yeah, we were just talking about that. I would say maybe to believe in yourself, you know, and not to constantly doubt yourself or think that someone knows something that you don't, you know, fear. I mean, it's been, you know, I look at it now and a lot of the things that I know musically or on the guitar were born out of fear that, you know, you think, oh God, I need to be able to do this. I need to be able to do, you know, if you're driven to be a certain kind of, for a long time, I thought my deal was to be, to end up in Nashville doing sessions. You know, when I was younger, my uncle was a professional musician and he was playing, in the 90s, he's kind of between Atlanta and Nashville a lot. And he was the one, and that was when I was maybe 13, 14, really taking the guitar seriously. And I know this didn't got shit to do with your question, but I'll come back around to it. But he's the one that first hipped me to the session thing. He would say, man, look, all these Nashville guys are playing on all these records, you know. Country music was big. There's a lot of Brooks and Dunn and Garth Brooks and Clint Black and all that. So it was Brent Mason on guitar playing on all these great, you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, man, that's it. I'm going to do that. So I went down the path of, like, everything I did, I was basing it on what I thought it would take to be that guy. You know, I had an ideal in my mind of what, you know, an incredible session guitar player must be like, because, man, there wasn't, you know, the internet and all this shit available back then. All you had, little boy in ball ground, I was sitting there thinking, man, I guess, you know, they can play everything, you know, any style of music, anything. So I just thought that's what it took. I mean, and it is, but at the same time, you know, I was still drawn to the players that had a singular voice, you know, and less of the chameleon type of guys, you know, like the Dwayne Allman. I mean, I know I've said Dwayne Allman 15 times during this interview, but I mean, a Larry Carlton or anybody, a Stevie Ray, all these guys that we all love, you know, we love them because they're who they are. They're their, you know, but then at the same time is that I had this great respect for all these guys. And I used to daydream about, oh man, they must show up. You know, I mean, you know, I had all these fantasies about what it would be like to do a session. And I mean, I, you know, and now I get to do it and it's incredible. But at the same time, I was torn, you know. It's only been in the last 5 or so years that the two worlds somehow have melded into one, and I've found some peace with that because I've been kind of like, well, who exactly is it? What are you trying to do, man? Are you trying to be this chameleon? That are you trying to be everything to everybody? Or are you trying to say what you would like to say? So, I think I would if I could. Say anything to a younger me, it would be yourself, man. It's okay. You know, it is okay. You don't have to base everything you're doing on what you think other people are expecting out of you. You know,
that's great advice, man.
And there's room for everybody, you know,
that's great advice. I'll tell you a funny story about that. I interviewed, you know, Reggie Young is,
of course.
So Reggie Young, for anybody not hip to him, is in Nashville. He's an older guy now. He's 81, 82. But in his heyday, he may be the most recorded session player alive. He's played on like 10,000 sessions or something. Anyway, I interviewed Reg and he told a story about early on when he first got to Nashville. And he's a very sweet, incredibly gentle, very sweet, loving person. And he's not like a wise ass or anything. But he goes to a session and someone says, Reggie, we need you to sound like Grady Martin on this. And Reggie looks up and says, man, Grady lives here. Like, and he wasn't trying to be funny, but he was like, you know, why don't you just call Grady? You know,
right.
For that reason that, he knew, he goes, listen, I'm not here to do Grady Martin. I'm here to do Reggie Young and I'll suit the song, but man, I'm not. That's not my deal. And, you know, he didn't mean it disrespectfully, like go get Grady. You know, he meant, hey man, if that's what you're looking for, you're better served giving Grady a call.
Yeah, man.
You know,
well, that's poetry.
Yeah,
that but was, that's kind of the way I feel now. And I mean, I'll tell you, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been racking my brain, you know, trying to please the guy that wanted me to sound like X.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, I know, you know, because, you know, I would have been, you know, you sit around and play out these scenarios in your mind, you know, and you base a lot of decision of what kind of gear you have, what kind of, you know, this approach, that approach, things you take in and integrate into your playing sometimes is because you're kind of stocking up on, you know, vocabulary in case this or that situation arises. But anymore, I just do kind of what I do. My number one goal is above anything is to serve the song and do what's right for the song. It's not like I'm wanting to come in and say, hey, Chris Blackwell has arrived. And you know, I mean, the music is the most important thing and what's best for the music. But at the same time, I think maybe an age now or at a point I've been playing long enough that I understand completely what Reggie meant.
Yeah. You
know, it's not like he wasn't saying, by God, I'm Reggie Young.
And oh, no, it's far. In fact, he said everybody was laughing and he didn't get it at first. He didn't realize because that's not his, you know, he's not a sarc. He's just a sweet, loving guy.
Yes.
And he didn't realize that, but he said everybody was cracking up like behind the booth, everything.
Yeah, so. Man. And two, through the year, I mean, you get to a certain point, I think, even though you strive daily, to work on your weak points, but you know where you're strong.
Yeah.
There, you know, like I think I know what, I'm most best suited to offer musically. Sure. know? And sometimes, you know, in a musical situation, the best thing for you to do is nothing, you know, or it's the simplest thing, or, I mean, that's a whole other conversation into itself. But the idea is that you know where you're strong, and so you don't want to – you would rather someone else you know, if they're looking for something that I'm not strong at, I had rather them call someone.
Absolutely. I totally get it, man. Yeah. There's less stress and it's just serving the music better, man.
It's like, man, why should I change a tire with this broken tire tool when I can call my buddy that's going to come in here with a wrecker?
Absolutely, man. I agree with you. And I just want to make one comment. You mentioned Brent Mason. I get a lot of email asking me to have Brent on this show. I've spoken to Brent probably close to a year ago, maybe 6 months ago, probably. And we had a very long text conversation. And he basically said that he's done so many interviews that he's just burned out. And I said, hey, this might be a little different. But he said, I appreciate that, but I'm not interested. Very nice. He wasn't rude. But if anybody knows him personally and you want to whisper in his ear, say, Brent, you really should do this show, do it. and I will give you a shout out on the Brent Mason episode. So I just wanted to say that because I get a lot of email for Brent and I'd love to have him on the show. He's just, you know, he's been there, done that. He's probably a different stage of his career.
Oh, there's no question. Yeah. I mean, he changed the game in that town.
Dramatically. Yeah. And same thing with Bukovac. People ask, like, get Bukovac on your show. In fact, yesterday I got an email. He doesn't do interviews. He's real quiet.
I said this about Brent once. I said, you know, I said, I've got a lot of friends that have went to Nashville and, you know, if you're really good, you go to Nashville and the next time I hear them, they sound like they've been in Nashville, you know? And I said, but you know, if you're truly, truly great, you go to Nashville and Nashville sounds like you. And that's what Mason did, man. He did it, you know? And there's, of course, man, there's no short. I mean, you know, Pat Bergeson's up there, you know? Jack Pearson, you know, I love Jack so much, man.
I've interviewed three or four guys who came to Nashville, went out specifically to clubs to see Brent play, and they had to have like a serious come to Jesus meeting with themselves because after that, you know, young new people in Nashville, they went back to their apartments or their room in their house they rent, and they're like, I don't know if I could do this. And, yeah, because that's a pretty old. And you know what? Johnny Hyland? And so he's legally blind. But I tell you, he had the best thing. What he would do is he said, man, I can do this. I just got to learn. So he would go to Brent Mason shows and bring a little tape machine in his pocket. And he would tape the shows. And so he was smart. He said, shit, man, I'm just going to learn how to do this. How do I learn? I can't go hang out with the guy. And he taped the shows, go back, and then study it.
Well, man, I didn't, you know, I wasn't lucky enough to be there in Nashville. But again, my Uncle Jeff, when that Hotwired album came out, he got in. I don't know what year that was, but I mean, I was 13 or 14 years old, maybe 15. And so he released the Hotwired album, and then he did one of those instructional videos too, Brent did. And
I think he did that with Arlen, right? Was that he did it with Arlen? Hotlex, yeah.
Yes. And so, man, I didn't know what an instructional tape was. I got that thing. I was like, they have these? People showing you how to do that. So anyway, all that to say, Brent was the guy that you had heard most about, you know? And so I'm sitting there as a kid in my bedroom thinking, well, I guess this is what it takes. This is the guy, this is what you have to be able to do to do that. And so, man, I was able to play pretty much that record, you know?
That's really impressive, dude.
Well, I mean, I didn't say thank you. And I mean, I couldn't do it now with a gun to my head, but I was just sitting there and man, and now I see these kids these days,
you know,
I wish I could have had, all the,
YouTube.
Yeah, man. You know, I got to, you know, you hear the generation before me guys will talk about listening to the record and picking the needle up and all. I had cassette tapes, You know, I didn't have to drop the needle, but I sat there, man, and wore my finger out on the rewind button many a time. Yeah. You know,
and then the next generation had the CD player with AB. They could stop it here and go play it back to there. And now, of course, they have digital. You could do whatever the hell you want.
Yo, dude, you can slow it down.
Automatic slow downer, man. I got it right here.
And then, you know, not only that, but hell, you can probably go on YouTube and just find a track of it with the guitar taken out so you can play right along to it, you know. Hell, I used to learn stuff, man, and sit there and couldn't hear it until you got on the gig. You know, like the first time you were going to try some hard shit out would be when the drummer counted it off and everybody looking at you, you know. So it's a different time, trial by fire.
Well, man, that's a good time to segue into gear.
Okay.
I love that red Strat of yours, but what's your go-to guitar right now, and what other two guitars would round out your top three?
Yeah, well, they're all Strats. I mean, I guess it's probably from that Stevie Ray thing back then when I saw when the world went golden. You know, I saw him and I was like, man, a lot of guys will hear me play and they'll say, man, why in the hell aren't you playing a Tele? You sound like, you know, and I was like, well, man, I've had everything under the sun and nothing has ever felt. I've never been able to bond with anything but a Strat. It's just it's right for whatever reason. It's just right to me. But the guitar I've played most of my life is just a Sunburst American Strat. I got it when I was like maybe 15. I still play it. It's a Sunburst Strat. And I've got that, and I've got the red guitar you were talking about is a custom shop Mike Landau Strat that I've got recently.
So that was relic'd, or is that beat up by you? Okay. I love the red, and I'm a rosewood neck guy or ebony, and I love that Fiesta. It's Fiesta Red, right?
It's actually Fiesta Red over a Sunburst.
Okay.
There's some spots where it's worn out. The Sunburst is coming through. But that's the Sunburst Strat that I've got, man. Quick story on that is, I don't know if I ever told anybody this really, but, so
when someone says that to me on here, that's like music to my ears. Because a lot of guys, I am very, very blessed, fortunate, and grateful that I hear that a lot. So thank you.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, dude, I've almost forgot that we were having an interview here.
that's cool.
Which one's conducting? I don't know if I'm interviewing you or the other way around. So this guitar, I had got a black. And some of the videos, if you went looking, I play a black Strat sometimes. I got that. That's a little Mexican Strat that I've put in an American neck and some different stuff on through the years. But that was my first kind of real guitar, you know, that wasn't like a Harmony or something like that. But then my dad was like always good about – well, son, you know, if you learn, you know, you get really good on this, then we'll get you, a nicer guitar, blah, 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 blah. So I always wanted a Sunburst Strat because that's what Stevie had, you know. And so he passed away. We weren't able to do that. So but the year after he passed away, my mom came to me. And she had this big jug full of change. And she said, your dad had been saving this money to buy you a guitar.
And wow.
I want to give it to you. And I counted it up, man. And there was about $700 or something there of change. And a friend of my dad's took me to a music store that was down in Atlanta. And I found this guitar, and it was a Strat Plus when I got it. So it was about $1,100 or something. So he paid the difference.
Wow. Cool, Chris.
So that one will always be number one. It'll always be there with me. It's the most important thing I've got, you know.
That is so cool, man. Thank you for sharing. That's a freaking great story, man.
Oh, thanks, bro. Thank you for asking.
What are those original Strat pickups, Strat Plus pickups?
No, that when I got it, it was lace sensors. If you've ever saw those, they don't have the magnet. So, I never did like those. I left them in for a while, but just because I was a young kid, and it had the LSR, the roller nut that had the ball bearings in it, and all that. So I ended up putting a different neck altogether on the guitar. I still got the original neck, but it was a maple fretboard. And like you, I've got a lust for the rosewood.
Oh, it's just it just feels like it's so much more in touch for me with the. I got a Strat, a Tele here. I got a Cell. I bought it. It's like brand new, and I don't know why I bought it, because I had a maple neck, and I've got to get rid of it.
Oh man. There's nothing worse than that, you know, having a guitar that you know is a great guitar, but for whatever reason, you just can't bond with it. And I mean, I've had that happen. I'll read Smiths, Les Pauls, I've had them all. And I just can't, you know, I'll take it. Every time I've got a new guitar and get all excited, I'll take it to a gig and I'll have my Strat sitting on a stand halfway through the first song every night. New guitar comes off. You know, it's just a. Such a creature of habit. And I see guys that play. I mean, don't get me wrong, man. If I go to a recording session, I'm coming in with several guitars. I mean, you got to cover all the bases. And but for a gig, if there's not a tuning thing or some kind of reason for me to change guitars, I'm not going to. I mean, I'm a one guitar guy, man.
He's even got a Fender sweatshirt on now. So anybody from Fender listening, if you're looking for a guy to endorse who actually plays Strats all the time, Chris Blackwell is your man. Give him a call, man.
I am your man.
Absolutely, man. No, it's like some guy, you know,
built at the factory by now, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, they got to hook you. It's like, you know, Greg Martin.
Yeah, I know who he is.
All he plays is a Les Paul, and they had a Greg Martin model, but like Gibson needs to get back and hook this guy up, because he doesn't play anything but that. And that's all he plays
anymore.
Nope. They only made a limited run, and like they have them once in a while, but they're like $4,500 when they come up. There's not very many of them. But just from a business standpoint, you know, that's you don't want the guy that's got 20 guitars and he's playing all 20 of them on the road. You want a guy like you. You're genuinely a Strat lover. He's genuinely a Les Paul. So yeah. Anyway,
true. I mean, and man, I've had, like, of course, I won't mention any names, but any kind of, you know, fancy boutique guitar you can think of. I mean, I've ordered Strat copies from all of them, thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, they're going to have the stainless steel frets. I'm going to get the exact fingerboard radius, and I get the custom wound pickups and all this shit that, you know, and you do that and you wait for months and you pay $4,000 or whatever it is. You get the guitar. And you're like, well, there you go. That's almost a Strat.
Really? Know? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've had it happen. I mean, to me, I mean, I know everybody, not to say it's not a wonderful guitar, but it's, you know.
You don't have the bonding, as you said.
Don't have the bonding and everything. It's always feels a little generic or something to me. I mean, there's just I'm a Fender dude, man. I love it.
So your Sunburst, what year is that ballpark?
95.
And the Fiesta Red is a custom shop reissue of
yeah, it's a, there's a Mike Landau, the fan, you know,
right, yeah,
popular LA session guy from, but this one is an exact copy of his 63.
Okay.
Strat. Yeah. Is made in the custom shop. And man, they've great pickups in that guitar, but I took them out and put EMGs in there. I've been using EMGs forever, and you know, traveling is something like with the ABBA show or any of these other acts that I go out with, you know, you play in an outdoor festival or an old theater or whatever, you know, you plug in a Strat and it's, you know,
yeah,
you know, I mean, there's ways to try to combat that, noise gates or this or that, and all that stuff just is a tone killer for me. So
do those have batteries, those EMGs?
They do, man. Yeah. They're active. And so I've got the back tone knob as a boost, which is – I've really loved – I mean, I've been using it that way for probably 15 years. And so when you flip down to the bridge pickup, I can roll in a little of the boost, and that kind of balances out. The bridge pickup can be a little weak. So with this boost knob, it's called the RPC or SPC, whatever it is. It's the EMG boost. But you can bring the bridge pickup up to where the level balances out. So when you're changing pickup positions, you're not dealing with, you know,
dropping volume.
Yes.
How do you know? This is a stupid question, man. How do you know when the batteries are going on them things?
Man, it'll be obvious, you know, it's just your battery will be dead one day. But I'm telling you, I mean, I've been 2 years and never changed a battery before.
Oh, I mean, wow.
hundreds of hours. It's just a typical 9-volt battery, you know?
Holy shit. Cause I've always avoided those for that reason, but it sounds like it's a non-issue.
Bro, it just goes, the battery will fit right on a strap. I mean, it'll just fit right up under your pick guard. Yeah. You know, the cavity is for the pickup switch. The battery just fits right up and under there. And you change it once every year and a half. And I'm talking, that's how I go a year and a half, and I'm playing the thing hours a day.
Yeah, nonstop. That's great. Do you know a guy named Chuck Ward out of Nashville?
Chuck Ward.
He's a mid-20s. Great player, but he plays EMGs in a telly.
Okay.
And he loves them for the same exact reason. I mean, he just loves them, man.
Oh, dude. Well, I mean, they're totally quiet. I mean, and they sound very stratty. I mean, I know for a lot of people, and for me in the beginning, they can sound a little sterile if you're used to, you know, the super, you got some badass regular magnetic pickups and a Strat or a telly or something. It's hard to beat that. But, man, for the noise factor and for having the boost and the consistency. And the other best thing about it for me is they're active. So when you roll the volume down, you don't lose anything. You don't lose any highs.
Yeah.
And that's the battle, you know? So it's the versatility, and I've gotten used to it. And man, you know, back in the, you know, a lot of guys, it was the thing back in the '80s, everybody was using the EMGs.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of the tones that I loved, you know, Carlton, Larry Carlton, when he was doing his Strat thing, it was EMGs, you know, the Valley Arch Strat, and hell, Lukather. I mean, everybody you can think of had an EMG period just about if they were playing on records, you know.
Very cool, man.
And I like it. And I don't know. Sometimes I can't tell the difference, you know. I mean, it's I'll hear me back on something and I'll think, well, man, that doesn't sound like a sterile active pickup. That sounds pretty okay, you know. I like them.
Good. So now we got you two sponsorships, man. EMG, here you go, man.
Bring it on.
Yeah, man. Oh, and I just want to mention, you mentioned Landau. That's another guy people always ask me to get on the show. I've been introduced to him. He is not a guy who does interviews. He's very reclusive and quiet. So I just wanted to address that.
Man, we're getting the whole scoop out.
Dude, we're getting everything out here, man. Yeah, hey, man, yeah.
If you heard the Chris Blackwell episode, they talk about everybody.
I hope so. I hope loads of people be saying that. Hey, anyone influence your playing that people might be surprised to hear?
Surprised to hear. I don't think so, man. I mean, I think I'm a pretty down the middle. I mean, it's easy to hear. I mean, of course, I listen to lots of different things. I mean, but I'm hesitant to call something an influence just based on the fact. I mean, I like classical music, you know, but I wouldn't say, you know.
Yeah, Beethoven influences your playing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, although I'm sure, you know, somehow it does. But I mean, for me, it's always been, you know, it started with probably, like a lot of people, it's just Skynyrd, you know, was the first thing when I was a kid. Then the Allman Brothers, and that whole scene, you know, the whole Southern rock thing. I mean, just, there's no way to escape it being from where I'm from. It was just all around.
It was the whole, even in the Northeast, that was. You know, I think it was the whole East Coast was pretty much exposed to that, man.
A whole bit, you know.
You said Wet Willie?
Wet Willie, yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed Ricky.
Oh,
Ricky,
yeah.
Hirsch. What a amazing guy.
I've never met him, but I'm going to see him on Friday. We're doing a show with this band I play with in town. We're doing a thing with Wet Willie, and
is Jimmy Hall going to be there?
Jimmy's going to be there.
Dude,
yeah.
When you meet Ricky, tell him that you and I spoke. He's a great guy, man. He's so great. Freaking cool. Yeah, he's awesome. I mean, just,
I definitely will.
Yeah, you'll love him, man. He's a wonderful dude, wonderful cat, great man. Yeah, really nice person, man.
I'm looking forward to that, man. I love their music, but you know, your taste expands as you go on and get into different things. I mean, these days I listen to more. I'm trying to not listen to so many guitar players. It's so hard. I love it so much, you know. But it's good to step outside of that for a while. I mean, I think it really helps you in developing your voice further, is to listen to things that aren't guitar related, you know, because you're listening to other guys, you're going to, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you listen. I've always loved piano players. I mean, Joe Sample was one of my all time favorite, you know. I mean, that might be unusual for some. I love everything. Everything he did, the Crusaders and all of his solo records, Sideman stuff, the records he played on for other people. I mean, I go back and listen to that stuff. Horn players, you know. But for me, the top guitar guys have always been, I mean, you know, of course, both Dickey and DeWayne. This is incredible. Larry Carlton is, I can't overstate that enough. I mean, I was at a party when I was, you know, about 15 years old. Everybody was older than me, you know, everybody. And it was an after gig party. And I always was like, for a long time, I was the youngest dude in a band. It's starting to change now, but I was always the young dude. And we were at a party and this music was playing. And I was like, man, I love this shit. What is this? and finally, I didn't know it at the time, but the tune was Kid Charlemagne. You know?
Oh, man, what a great. Wow.
Just listening and my head's being sucked in through the speakers, you know. And then the guitar solo rolls around. I'm like, okay, man, here we go. So I actually I stole the CD. I was at a friend's house and he had, it was like one of those 5-disc changers, and he just had music going, party going on, and I eased on over there, opened the tray and spun it around, and I stole that record, man. It was
Wow, that's funny, man.
I stole that record, that CD, and left and listened to it.
And left. I booked out of there with my stolen merchandise. All the dirt's coming out in the wash today, man.
I did confess to him later on that I had done that, and he didn't care because he had done the same to me many times over.
You know, but, man, I was somewhere and I stole a baseball card one day, and I have a baseball card, and I was like riddled with guilt for years over that, man. It's like I felt horrible, man. You know, like,
oh, me.
Stupid shit you do when you're a kid.
I considered it boring more than anything. I stole a piece of gum when I was from a little store here out from the house when I was a kid, and I got in the car, and it was the old mom looked and saw me, and she said, "Where'd you get that?" And I said, "I took it." She said, "Get your ass right back in there and you tell Lou his name." And so I went in there and I broke down crying, "Lou, I stole this gum." So he's like, "Well, okay, you know, whatever." And that was it. That was it for me. I never took anything else, stole anything except for a piece of gum and a Steely Dan CD.
Steely Dan CD. That's funny, man.
I still listen to that record all the time. I mean, that's usually what I listen to. It's either Donald Fagen's solo records or any of those great Steely Dan records. It's the thing I've listened most to in my life, I would say.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people ask me, what are the common qualities of great guitarists? Number one, for sure, is their family was incredibly supportive of them. Even if they had dysfunction in the family, they were supportive of their career. But number two is they all listened to a wide variety and liked a wide variety of music.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very common. And it's always, you know, I always just make note of these things because it just interests me, you know?
Man, it's like, you know, you realize it's like discovering a whole new world.
Yeah.
You know, when you're, for me, I mean, a young dude in such a small town, my dad ran a sawmill, you know?
Wow.
I mean, nothing. I mean, there wasn't much going on. And I would take a record and put it on, and it was just like, I would be gone, man.
Yeah.
Just totally gone. And I had to know. I was so desperate for information when I was younger, man. My uncle was a drummer, but he also played guitar. He wrote tunes. I mean, he was a great, he was a legit badass, man. But he would play fingerstyle acoustic guitar. So I would watch him, and I thought that's how you played the guitar. So that's why.
Wow.
Play that way now, you know. I mean, I use a pick. I play hybrid style, but I just thought, so every time I heard something on a record, I would just figure that the guy was playing it with his fingers like that, with a pick in his fingers.
Oh, and, shit.
Yeah. And same with, like, you know, those B benders and stuff. I mean, like I would hear somebody like All of My Love or whatever, you know, the Zeppelin tune. And I was like, wow, how in the hell is he doing that? And I'll try to figure it out. Then years later, hell, I mean, I was well into my teens before I realized Dwayne tuned to open E, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's not something, you'd know. That's like a, it's like another, you know, that's like a mystery almost, you know?
Yeah. You know, but except for when you're a kid and you're sitting there with your slide and you're trying to figure out, you know, cause these intervals are so much closer in the open E tuning, you know, the little stuff that he's playing. But once you tune to open E and then sit there and work it out, you're like, oh, shoot, this all makes perfect sense now, you know, kind of. I mean, as far as like position, neck position, yeah, as how he would arrive at, you know, what he's doing, as opposed to being in standard tuning and making these weird jumps. It's like, well, man, well, that's kind of an unorthodox move. But anyway, yeah, so discovering new music, I mean, I would just, you know, but my uncle would tell me, he would literally, it was hard for him. I mean, he would spend time with me and show me things, but just time with him as I was younger was kind of a fleeting thing. So I would just aggravate the shit out of him whenever I got a chance to. And I remember he would verbally explain to me one time, like, you know, what a bar chord was, you know. And I remember, like, I would just, I sat there like in a trance. I mean, I was, what, 7 or 8 years old, seven maybe. And till I could get my hand, you know, that might be at a restaurant. He would tell me something like that, and I would have to wait hours till I got back home, got my guitar and, you know, remember what he was saying. And I, man, it was just like, I mean, I was determined, man. And I try to stay that way even today. I'll sit up till 2 or 3 in the morning playing, you know. But I wish I could have had the resources that are there now. And in a way, I mean, because I hear these guys now and it's like it's missing some. I mean, not to generalize, but a lot of the, you know, it's just so easy to find now that everybody's, you can watch just a million videos back to back of people playing incredible shit on a guitar, and most of them are, you know, 14 years old. But it's almost like I'm not able to identify what it is that's missing from what they're doing, but it's definitely something. And it's almost like they've learned to play the guitar in the same way they would learn to beat a video game or something.
It's mechanical. And it's funny, I read an article the other day. I've only been playing guitar close to 3 years, right? And I'm at the point in time where when I read this article, it clicked. And I wish I remember who said this, but the guy said, I never practiced. Actually, it was drummer, the guy that used to yell and scream.
I don't narrow it down for drummers.
Yeah. No, an older guy from the 50s and 60s. Buddy Guy. Not Buddy Guy, Buddy Rich. Buddy Rich.
Oh, yeah. Of course. That makes sense. Yeah.
Right. And he said, I never practiced because I always wanted to play with people. And he said, you get so much more out of playing with somebody for an hour than sitting in your room for 7 hours.
Of course. That's music, you know?
And that's what I think you're referring to, because I'm at a point in time now where I'm thinking, man, you know, not now, but I could see coming up in the next 6 to 8 months. Cause I don't want to get into my guitar playing, but I could see the benefit of that. And I'm going to need to do that because I want to do that. I want to play with people.
Even if it's just another guy sitting there,
anything. Right. Right.
I mean, you will, exponential growth.
Yeah,
I mean, there's certain things that's just because, man, something happens, you know. It's when you're with someone else or in a band situation, the heat's on, man. You know, you're not sitting there with all the time in the world to work something out or think it through. It's, you know, it's now or never, you know. There's that element, and there's also the being motivated and inspired what they're doing.
I think it's freeing. I mean, outside of after you get over the initial jitters, I think it's liberating because you're like, that's what music is. You know, music is not me practicing in my, right here with my guitar, with my Strat, you know,
right. That's practice.
Yeah. Right. That's not making music. And I'm aware of that, you know? So I thought that was good what he said. I was appreciative. I saw that.
Yeah, man.
Desert Island Discs, top 3.
Oh,
just wow. For today, man. You could change them tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Just for today. Well, yeah. Okay. I'll say Allman Brothers Live at the Fillmore.
I knew that was coming.
Steely Dan's Royal Scam.
I love that record.
Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions.
That comes up a lot.
Does it?
Yes.
That's three records that I could listen to for the rest of my life.
Very cool. I love that Royal Scam, man.
Oh, man. It's a masterpiece. It's a clinic in every way.
I remember listening to that. I had a Walkman. I'm dating myself. But when I go to school, I'd be sitting on the subway, and I'd listen to that over and over and over again. Because they were kind of like they were in New York. Those guys are from New York. So I always would think in my mind, were they playing down at the Village or something? They weren't, but they were in the studio.
But that's what I'm talking about, man. Yeah. That's your imagination's at
yeah.
work.
Yeah. You know? Oh, it was wonderful. Even today, man, I was in the gym and I was listening to some music and I was like, it just evoked the kind of feeling. I'm like, man, I've got to go home later. And when my wife's not around, put this on and blast the fucking shit out of it. Because it just felt so good, and it really felt like it was kind of trippy music. And I wish I could, like, I'm not a guy to like catch a buzz in the middle of the day, you know, but like it really needs to like be in at night if I'm having a drink or something. And you know, it's such a great feeling, man.
Yeah, man, there's music for all occasions, you know.
Very much.
Wow. Very much. It's the universal language for real, isn't it?
It is, man. And it, anyway, we can get on a whole big tangent of that, but this is a tough question for you, for everybody, but it's tough for musicians, but I think it's tough for most normal people. What do you like most about yourself?
Oh, wow.
Ask a bunch of self-loathing musicians, what do you like most about yourself?
Oh, man. Oh, well, there's a pretty short list.
First time Chris Blackwell has stuttered the whole hour and 25 minutes.
I talked the paint off a stop sign until you got serious. Now, something I like about myself, and man, I'll say this, that I've only learned this in the last couple of years, but that if I want to do something, I can do it. You know, I believe that now, and I didn't always. With the health stuff that I went through, you know, losing the weight and a lot of musical situations I've been put in, you know, I mean, I've taken on things musically that I had no business taking on. I've said yes and thought, well, I'm going to have to figure it out as I go because I'm in over my head here, you know, playing with, you know, orchestras or whatever. I don't read music. I mean, you know, you say you get asked to do something and, you know, if you think you've got it in you to do it, you do it. But the self-doubt, I've had a lot of that. I mean, a lot of it in my life. But I think I've realized with what I've been through, especially now being a dad, you know, that if I have to do something, if I need to do something, I'm able to do it. You know,
that's great, man. I'm really happy that you feel that way. Because it does make a huge difference in your life and about everything, about where you're going to go, how you're going to get there, and who you're going to get there with, man. Flip side, if there's one thing you could change, what would it be?
Whew. Well, I mean, I would have probably started believing in myself a lot sooner than I did, you know. I don't want to come across like I've got some kind of real self-hatred, but I've had a lot of time in my life where I felt like I was just kind of bobbing up and down in the water, you know, still working on myself, working on my playing, still had things going on, but like I didn't have really a clear direction, or maybe my voice hadn't developed fully, you know. Yeah. And I think a lot of that was to do with kind of an uncertainty of a fear of commitment, you know?
I think it's hard, though, to start believing in yourself earlier, because usually belief comes from problems.
Yeah, man.
When, you know, like you had the diabetes thing and you said, okay, You know, and this is the tough part, and you'll see this as you're raising your daughter, like when you're raising kids, because they have self-doubt, and like you could sit there till you're blue in the face saying, hey, I know you could do it, just try it. And sometimes they will and sometimes they won't. And it's frustrating because you know, hey man, even if you fail, you're going to be so much, and you know, you can't make someone do anything, you know? Exactly. But yeah, so I feel you, man.
Well, that's that thing, you know, I mean, you know, it's like the cycle of life where I can hear my dad in my head right now. You'll understand this one day, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course. And I wanted to put a bow on the diabetes thing too. I don't have it anymore, by the way.
Because of the weight loss.
Of weight loss.
That's phenomenal, man. And you don't have to take any meds. Insulin. That is great, man. That is major.
I was off. I was on blood pressure pills and all this stuff. I'm not on any of that anymore. So just in case anybody cares to know, I was able to reverse the type 2 thing.
Dude, so. You just gave us better headlines for the info product. How to completely reverse diabetes, eliminate high blood pressure in 12 months or less.
Use common sense.
Send us $99.99. It will send you our program. That's great, man.
A pamphlet that says don't eat bad shit.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
The end.
That's it. That's all you need, man. Chris, tell me something about yourself that people might be surprised to hear or might find a little odd.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I'm too odd. The only thing that comes to mind that might be a little funny is I watch TV shows that old women like. I like Matlock and Murder, She Wrote.
Oh my God, that is funny as hell.
I like old Detective Columbo and all that stuff. And, you know, somebody pointed out to me the other day, said, man, you do realize that every commercial for the shows you watch is for fucking hover rounds and diapers and stuff like that. And I was like, man, leave me alone. Get out of here.
Oh my God. Enjoying this. That's awesome. That's great, man. Happiest moment or time in your life?
Yeah. Well, that would have been, I mean, I would say, you know, it's hard. I mean, right now with, you know, of course with family, with my girl, this is a pretty good time. And musically, I mean, I'm loving everything. I'm just so lucky right now, man. I've got my health. When I was a kid and my dad was around and, you know, I was just discovering all the music and playing guitar all day and doing that. I mean, that was a pretty happy time for me up till I was about, you know, my dad he was sick for about a year or so before he passed away, a couple of years. So I would say from about 8 to 12 years old was a pretty good 4 year, because I was kind of online and in the guitar thing pretty heavy. My dad was there and super supportive. And
that's really cool, man. That's a good run. 4 years. I don't think I've ever asked that question. Someone gave me a 4 year run, man. So you're a lucky man.
I'm breaking down all the walls today.
There you go, man.
Getting new ground.
Who's had the biggest influence on your life musically and personally?
My Uncle Jeff. You know, without a doubt. I mean, he was my hero growing up. We had the music thing in common, but he was a dude that it was impossible not to love him. You know,
that's cool.
He was one of these. He was Mr. Charisma and all that. Cool dude. He was just a right amount older than me. I mean, you know, he was probably 10 years. So he's 10 years older. So he had all the cool shit and would come by and show me some cool shit on the guitar and tell me this and that. And then later on, he would take me to Nashville with him. You know, I was so young, dude, but he would talk these club owners into letting me go in and kind of sit in the back and watch him play, you know, and I would meet the cats he was playing. I mean, it was great, man. He was, you know,
he was playing drums or guitar.
He was playing drums, you know, during the Nashville stuff, he was a drummer, but I mean, around town here in Atlanta, he would just as likely be playing bass, guitar, or front of the band singing.
That's cool. So super talented guy.
Super talented guy, man. Great writer, you know, but it's hard to put into words.
This is another tough question. What's the best thing that ever happened to you?
Oh man, that's my daughter, without question.
That's nice, man. Make sure you play this for her.
Oh shoot, she likes to sing now, man. we just had a, she's four, you know, but I think she's, I think it's got a halt to her. We just had my uncle I was just talking about. He passed away with lymphoma 3 years, 3 years ago.
Is that your dad's brother or your mom's brother?
My dad's brother. Yeah.
Okay.
Dad's brother. And so each year we've been having, for 2 years while he was still alive and for the 3 years past, we've had a thing. His name was Jeff Blackwell, and we have a little thing in Ball Ground, call it Jeff Jam.
And oh, that is great, man.
An all day thing. There's music. Everybody in the family plays, and all the local bands come and play, and we take and we raise money and give it to a local family that's struggling with cancer.
Wow. That is such an awesome thing, man.
Thank you, bro. We just had it this past weekend, and my little girl, Rylan, is her name, and she got up and sang two Christmas tunes. I played guitar. She sang Jingle Bells and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and she loved it, man. She loved it so much, and the place just went nuts, of course. So, she, you know, there's no talking her out of it now.
That's great, man. Mm-hmm. If people want to go there, or when you have it, I guess in like October, end of October, on Halloween maybe or something?
Yeah, it's once a year. We do it once a year, usually in November. I think next year it's going to be on November the 23rd, I think.
Do you post it anywhere?
I'll post it on Facebook for sure.
Okay. So everybody that's you know, interested in that, that's kind of cool, man. That's a nice thing.
Thank you, man. Well, it's just it's great. I mean, everybody loved him. And so it's no shortage of bands and people wanting to chip in. So it's kind of a community thing.
That's,
you know,
great, man. That's
it's wonderful, dude. You know, and to be able to have my daughter involved. And
yeah.
It's just great. You know, thank you for saying that.
Man, two more questions. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Other than hating myself,
we got to work on that, man.
Between that and playing guitar, that takes up most of my time. Yeah. I don't have any other hobbies, man. I wish I did, you know, but
it's hard. You got a 4-year old, man. Let me just tell you, it's, you don't have much wiggle room right now, man.
That takes the time. But man, if I was doing something else, if I were to do another hobby, the only thing I would be thinking while I was doing that is like, you should be playing your guitar right now. You know?
Yeah. It's hard when your hobby and your vocation are the same thing.
Yep.
For all you guys that I interview, you know? And Chris, last question, and man, I could talk to you all day. You're such a nice guy. Biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years, and how much of that change has been deliberate and how much is just a part of aging?
Wow, man. And you're going deep.
We don't dick around here, man. I could ask you about your string gauges if you want.
I'd have a more readily available answer to that. I think, man, and this is something I felt in the last 2 years specifically. I'm 37, and I have felt an actual literal change in myself where I've somehow – I found some kind of peace with me liking what I like and it being okay for me to not like something that I don't like. And it's, and this is all, there's been like some merging of all these things that have been in play in my mind and in my life. And it's all happened in the past couple of years where all of a sudden it's like, okay, it's okay for me to not understand something. And I don't care, you know, I mean,
I don't
understand it. If I'm not moved by this or that, then there's not something wrong with me. I just don't like that.
Yes. Yeah. So you got more comfortable in your own skin. It kind of sounds like
that is absolutely true.
That's awesome, man. That's really good because to start getting there at 35 is really cool. You usually don't get there until you're like, in 10 years more at least.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, well, so you're ahead of the curve, or I'm real behind the curve, which is very, very possible. I'm serious. But most guys I talk to in their, you know, late 40s, early 50s, that's when you start sort of like.
You've heard that a lot then.
Yeah, because I've talked to a lot of older guys, you know, and it's like, you just like, well, you just don't give a fuck, you know. It's like, you know, I don't, you, you, you're just content with you, and you realize, you know, man, that's the only person I really need to satisfy, as long as I'm not being, you know, like confrontational or disrespectful or, you know, at someone else's expense and satisfying myself. You're just really good with it. Cause like, you know, you only got so many years left. You just kind of become aware of that. You're like, man, I got to live for me and, you know, do my thing.
It's true, man. I mean, you go through enough shit at some point. I've always said that I'm, you know, I'm 37, but I'm probably 51 in musician years. You know,
there you go.
I've been at it a long time, but it's you do get to a certain point where you've kind of been around enough to know, you know, whatever, man. I know what I can do, what I like and what I don't, and I just want to help where I can help. But man, if I'm not moved by something, it's not because there's a problem with me. It's just because that's not my thing, and it's okay. That used to bother me. I mean, you really used to bother me that if I didn't get something, or, you know, if, then I would think, well, clearly I've got the problem.
You're deficient. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but that's not true. And if it is true, I don't give a shit. So either which one
doesn't matter. I know, man.
I've come to that point in the road, you know.
Good for you, man. I'm really, you're awesome. And I'm really happy to hear that, man. You sound like you're just like coming into your, like just being real happy, which is awesome.
Oh, man.
Chris, thank you so much for everything. I really appreciate your time. You're a hell of a sweet guy. Like I knew you, this was going to be, and let me tell people where to find you. First of all, it's Chris Blackwell, and he's got a Alfreda Gerald's record is coming out soon. Do you know when that's coming out?
No, it'll be sometime early next year.
And I'm assuming you're going to be promoting or talking about it on your Instagram a little bit once it pops. Yeah. Okay, so you can find Chris on Instagram, and his ID is C Black, like Chris Blackwell, CBlack781. And he also is playing loads over all around the Atlanta area, and he always posts his shows there. So go check him out on a gig. He's a really great player. He's got a great groove. Serves a song, and everything he said is true. He's got his shit together, and I think you'll enjoy him musically very much. And also, he's on Facebook at Chris Blackwell, and check him out if you're into ABBA, man. Go see the ABBA show. And he also does online Skype lessons, but he only teaches intermediate and above level people. So if you're at a certain point in time and maybe you're stuck or you just need someone to objectively review your playing, he's a great guy to deal with. And you can hit him up again on Facebook or Instagram. And also, if you are looking to get tracks done, he's your man. Give him a shout. Same way, connect with him on Facebook and Instagram. And he's done loads of stuff, and you can find him online, and I'm sure he'll be happy to talk with you. I think that's it, man. Did I miss anything?
No, man. That's wonderful. Craig, I also wanted to say thank you so much, man, for having me, and what a great, great show you've got.
Thanks,
I've listened to it. I discovered this podcast out laying in a bunk on a tour bus, and it's kept me.
Well, thank you, man. I'm so happy you came on the show. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
All right, bro.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it with a friend on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks again very much to Chris Blackwell for spending time with us. Please go check him out at a gig and tell him you heard him on the show, and have a good laugh with him at me sounding like an idiot. And make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com, sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.